grandma and your grandma were sitting by the fire. My grandma told your grandma, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. You're talking about henna, 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 Aiko, Aiko, Ande, Giacomo, Fino, Anane.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
Hello, fools.
Hello, fools.
You foolishly, but thankfully,
turned in to another episode of Las Culturistas. You've turned in.
Yes, you've turned in. Guys, we are classically back from another hiatus, but this time we have episodes. We're recording enough ahead of time to sort of, you know, spread out throughout the weeks ahead.
We took to Gmail and scheduled 3 dates. Okay.
Yes, 3 dates. We're going to condense the recordings, but we're going to spread out the releases. But this is the thing, Matt, and I don't know how you feel about this. What if by the time an episode comes out that's been recorded pre-recorded, will that lose any sort of relevance unless we explicitly state in the episode this was recorded on this date? You know what I'm saying?
I feel like we're actually okay. I feel like then it's not going to be too far apart.
I mean,
I understand your concern to want to be as prescient.
No,
possible.
I'm just saying, like, the culture we live in now, culture.
It's rapidly changing.
Exactly. If you think 2 days ago was a huge news day, and now I feel so far removed from it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know what? On Culturistas, we keep it, a little bit
timeless.
Current, but it's also timeless.
Yes, absolutely.
Every episode truly exists as its own,
in a vacuum.
As its own piece.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so great about it. I think whenever I talk to somebody that's a listener of Las Culturistas, they say, I really enjoyed this piece.
Someone says, someone said to me once, that episode of Las Culturistas could have been recorded in the
1984.
1800s. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, guys, we have such an incredible guest with us today.
Really, I think, maybe I'm biased, but my favorite guest.
Oh, you know what? You might be biased, but I might be biased in saying he's one of my favorite people in my life.
Absolutely, I would agree.
Yes.
And the credits.
Oh, come on.
First, let us say, A Little Night Music at UCB East is coming up. The date is
January 20th.
Ooh, yes. Girl, you
the
and I...
The day of all days.
The day of all days. But girl, you and I have done this show before. It's a fantastic show.
So fun. And I really think that it's one of the best shows at the Beast.
I agree.
I just think it's so fun. You get to see UCB comedians singing and expressing themselves through music.
And
because music heightens every emotion, as they say.
Music heightens every emotion, as they say. Oh, he plays piano and accompanies musically for so many shows in the city. I've seen him, just off the top of my head, play for Three Basie Diapers at Carnegie Hall, play for Patty Harrison at Ars Nova, play for so many shows. He is just such a fixture, such an important figure in the community.
Everywhere, and by everywhere, I also mean you might have recognized him from Live From Everywhere, which was a show hosted by Arthur Meyer, aired on Facebook Live. It was amazing.
I thought it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Very, very cool. He considers his number one achievement to be meeting Julie Andrews, which is very interesting in light of recent events.
Yes, and who knows where this new milestone will stack up to the rest.
But internet fame? Virality?
Yes, girl. Yes, God.
I agree.
Guys, please welcome our guest, Henry Kapersky.
Hi, good unison.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Well, we've had many years to practice. In fact, sometimes we don't even mean to be in unison. We
exactly.
Just
I just, whenever I'm around Matt, I pitch up. My timbre just matches.
His. I always know something's gonna end in a high place.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
Oh,
that's kind
that
of
is
our,
your thing. Yeah.
Thing. Mm-hmm. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm really, truly so happy to be here. This is one of my favorite podcasts. Like I would say,
oh,
top three.
God. What?
And I know that I love both of you IRL a lot, but I it doesn't like take part in why I love this podcast.
Wow. But how many podcasts do you listen to?
At least like 6 regularly.
Yes.
And then
seriously?
Like maybe 10 like semi-regularly.
See, but Matt is really behind the curve on podcasts.
I don't listen to them because I feel as if, and actually
selfish.
Whenever anyone says that they listen to this one, I'm always like, geez, Louise, like I love you to death because like it is a sit to listen to a podcast.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But you know, when you're cooking in your kitchen or riding the subway or
I need whatever. To get more into listening to them on the subway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whenever someone references something that happened that I know happened the very end of a Las Culturistas episode,
I'm like,
that means you sat through the entire episode.
Wild.
And remembered something enough to refer it to like regurgitate it back to me. It's wild.
I truly think they're all thrilling start to finish. And thrilling. Even with like guests that I didn't know or like are not on my radar at all. And now I'm fans of everyone that's been on the show.
Those are some of his favorite episodes, he tells me.
Which
are
ones? The ones that he didn't know anything
He really
prior.
Enjoyed the one with Nicole Conlon.
Nicole
Yeah,
Conlon.
I've never met her. And I loved her episode. And it was about sports. I hate sports.
Yeah, famously. It's interesting. We hate sports.
We hate it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's so wonderful to hear. What was I going to say?
Well, I just want to say we scooped the scoop this week. Because we are the first to interview Henry Kapersky after he met Michelle Obama.
On TV.
We're filming this on Thursday. It was yesterday, but when you guys listen to it, it'll be 2 days ago.
Oh my God.
He met Michelle Obama. You met Michelle
Henry. Yeah. Describe this to the listeners. What happened? Like, how were you contacted? What was the day like? If you're allowed to divulge this,
I think so. My friend Arthur, who I did the Comedy Central pilot with, he is like a writer at Jimmy Fallon's Tonight Show. It's never been said that way before.
Jimmy Fallon Tonight Show.
Right.
I think he's like the writing supervisor. He's been with them for a long time. He's an amazing person that I love dearly and has given me some awesome opportunities.
Sweetheart.
And is, just so, so nice. Mm-hmm. And he texted me the day before the show and was like, "You like Michelle Obama, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, I love her." And I sent him like screenshots of like things I've said about her on social media and stuff. And he was like, "Are you free tomorrow morning to film this silly segment where you just like talk to a portrait of her and thank her? And then we're going to show the footage to her later on the show and she'll get choked up, hopefully."
Oh.
And I was like, "Oh yeah, of course." And I wrote a message that night after watching Obama's incredible farewell speech.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Which the most emotional part was when he brings up Michelle.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
Waterworks. Lost my train of thought. Oh yeah, I wrote a message and I got to the studio and I met, there was 12 of us that got this opportunity and I was talking to the other people and I felt like the message I wrote wasn't like specific enough to me. It was like too general. It was just like saying how great she is. And I was like, I got to write something else. And minutes before I went in, I got inspired. I was like, truly, like, what does Michelle mean to me, really?
Yeah.
And I just like spit it out on my iPod or iPhone and then like said it to myself a bunch in my head. And I walked in the room and dear Arthur was there standing and he directed me to the portrait. Mm-hmm. And I nailed it. I said it so perfectly and I
really
was
well.
So happy with my delivery because I usually stumble in live performances. I'm trying to get better about that in 2017.
Mm-hmm. Resolution.
And yes. And so I was just like happy that
That's actually rule number 18 of culture.
You do not stumble in a live performance. In culture.
No.
Yeah.
So anyway, you nailed it.
I nailed it and I just felt so good and was like ready to like turn around and be like, "Okay, got it." And then she walks out from behind the curtain. Whoa. And I truly started hyperventilating. I was like,
"You didn't think there was any chance that she was there?"
No, I mean, in like the back of my head, I was like, "Wouldn't it be crazy if she's actually going to be there?"
Yeah.
And we had to go through the Secret Service to get into 30 Rock and stuff.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, "But they're probably just there all day when like the first lady comes."
Sure.
So I just put it out of my mind because I was like, this is just an incredible opportunity anyways.
Oh my God.
She walked through and I started hyperventilating and I can't even remember until I saw the show air. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even remember what she was wearing because all I saw was her face and like beams of light coming out of it.
Oh my God.
Like it, like she was like the Virgin Mary, just like I'm making hand motions that you can't see. Like,
yes.
You know, like a halo kind of thing.
Yes. An angel on this earth.
Yeah. She truly is an angel and she has this presence. Okay. I've said this before out loud to people. When I saw A Little Night Music, the Sondheim musical with Bernadette and Elaine Stritch, when Bernadette makes her first entrance, the air gets sucked out of the room.
Yeah. Oh my
God. Like she has that special presence. We're just like, oh my God, you truly are
a star.
It.
Yeah.
And that same thing with Michelle Obama. Like, and you know, I was the third person to go. And even the camera people, you could tell every time she walks in, I bet they were all just like, because she's that incredible. Yeah. She's so, her heart is so golden and pure. And I truly believe like she's not like putting on a show at all. Like that is her down to her core. And oh my God, it was so beautiful. And I can't even remember what she was saying to me. It's all blur. The main question people are asking me is, what did she smell like? I have
no
idea.
Oh my God, yes.
I can't remember at all. That's like, okay. I have no idea.
I mean, watching you react to it, I have got to be honest. I have cried for many reasons over the past 24 hours for many times. And, but like every single time I watch it, like today he came in the door from wherever you were coming from. And I was like truly crying because I watched it again. And I was like, this is such a special moment. And I have to say it is very bittersweet.
It's, oh, absolutely. But that moment, I just have to say, like, yes, there's something about the sentiment that's being expressed by all these people.
Yeah, it's real.
Mm-hmm. And just her presence. And so, yeah, I watched it again this morning with Doug, our friend Doug. And he hadn't watched it up until that moment. And he was just like, he started laughing uncontrollably about how amazing this was. And I was like, yeah. Isn't this incredible?
It's insane.
Yeah.
Like, no, like, I can't think of a public figure that has that effect on people.
And to meet her this week.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean? Like, it was such a good, I mean, kudos to the Tonight Show for this. Like, it would have healed my soul even if Henry wasn't in it.
Oh, sure.
But the fact that, like, you were, that was just such a special gift.
I want to say, like, the other people that got that opportunity were such incredible people. Like, many of them were, like, women that had started their own company who said they were inspired by Michelle. Like, we all, like, talked beforehand.
Yeah.
Or one, like, started this scholarship that helps young women of color, like, find the right college and stuff. Yeah. Like,
there was that dad that was really sweet.
Yeah, too. Yeah. And I felt really so... I truly, I'm so grateful that it happened, but I don't think I deserve to
yes,
be there.
Yes, you absolutely deserve it.
And I'm not looking for that reaction either. I'm not looking for that reaction. I really did not know I was going to meet her, and I thought it was just going to be a fun thing. If I did, I maybe would have recommended a friend.
There's
20 people I think deserve to experience that more than me.
He so often doesn't realize how special he is.
No,
this is Michelle. And you really very Michelle Obama like of him to do.
Yeah, and it's very humble of you to do this, but I have to say, this was chicken soup for the soul.
Yes.
For everybody that knows you.
It was you.
Because we're so happy that it was you, because you make every space that you're in so much better and so much warmer. And what I always say about Henry, and
I
get emotional as I say this.
Come on, let's cry.
He really makes everybody sing.
Yes,
and
yes.
That is so beautiful.
Oh my God.
And just to see everyone in these new spaces, like, I just think you are such a gift to this community. I really do. Like, over the past, you know, 2 years that I think you've really been involved in it, you really have just, you've changed
people,
you've changed
Henry,
the
okay?
whole game. And that's another reason why I really want everybody to support A Little Night Music, because this is, it puts these really kind of figures at UCB and comedic figures that we kind of look up to, and it puts them in a vulnerable place. And I think that's why Shannon O'Neill is so behind the show.
Yes.
And I think it's why the show keeps going, because you allow people a new experience. And what we don't realize as artists is that we crave that. And you provide that for everybody. And I think that's such a special, unique thing that you do. And you are so special. And you deserve this opportunity more than anybody that I know. I count myself so lucky to obviously share what we have together. But you just... I couldn't think of a better person.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
And everybody agrees.
Everybody agrees.
I think everybody agrees.
We're not the first people to say this. People said this on social media. The minute you came, I watched this live at home. I was like, I'm not missing this. I want to see this as it happens.
Yeah.
I was just lying on my couch, just watching, and I was like, oh, Jimmy Fallon's on TV. Okay, cool. And then this happened. And the minute you came on screen, Henry, just chills. And I texted you afterwards, like, I'm shaking. It just...
You just brought pure joy to that moment, and pure genuine appreciation and joy. And that is something that I think that we're going to have to really, oh my God, as I start crying, really remember over the next however long this continues to go on, because that is something that is like really missing.
Yep.
And I just think that we really could learn something from people like Henry, who, you know, like, find a way to keep going and keep bringing joy to the world. And I really just want everyone to remember that, you know, like, with social media and, you know, I get that everyone's very fired up and very upset. Like, just remember that, like, there's still a lot of good in the world. There's still a lot of reasons to be happy. And there's, it's not over.
It's not
until over. Until we give up, you know, and let's just not give up, and let's keep filling the world with positivity, because at the end of the day, like, that's all we have. because it could be bleak.
It's not only just positivity, it's humanity, and that's what we will have to like struggle harder and harder to access, and B is what like Michelle and Henry just exude.
Definitely do not deserve to be.
No, you are.
Michelle and Henry.
You are definitely a light. You definitely are a light, and so is she. And we're blessed. You go ahead and use the word blessed. Why the fuck not? Come for me. Come for me, people who don't want me to say blessed. For this I don't give a fuck.
Judeo-Christian language. I don't approve. I'm coming for you later on, honey.
Yes, come for me. But well, you know what? I just think let's give a shot. Just like just putting some like when you step out into the world, just like do something that's gonna be nice for someone else. Do something that's gonna be positive for someone else, because it really makes a huge difference.
Okay, this is huge, Matt. Thank you for saying that, because in my bullet journal this year, everyone, if you're
bullet journaling a new trend.
If you're on the bullet journal craze, let me know. I'm loving it. I really nothing has stuck with me like this in a while.
Wow.
So hopefully I encourage you all to just Google bullet journaling.
Yes. Well, don't explain bullet journaling.
So, oh my God.
Float away from
honey.
I don't even know what it is.
Here we go. So about last year, this just like douchebag of a man, but actually no, he's a good person. He released this video called how to bullet journal.
Is it Tim Ferriss?
Tim Ferriss. Okay. It's not Tim Ferriss, but he's like also, yeah, like
same kind of
douchey
thing.
Person, but means well is like, right. Chaotic good. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so this guy puts out this video about how to bullet journal, which is just basically a system of A, planning, B, like logging your day, C, like planning. I already said planning, but like C, like just sort of organizing your thoughts, because I used to just write notebooks and like scribble nonsense, and I would never refer back to it. Would never flip back through my pages and be like, what did I write this day? Like, never had to refer back to it, because I never wanted to, because it was never built into that system of just...
So it's a way to organize your journal?
So it's just like a non-linear way. So it's like you set up, you have to number every page of a blank notebook as you go. Not like you sit down one day and just number every single blank page, but as you keep going forward, you number every page. But there's a table of contents that you refer back to. And as it's like, as you're going through this, you basically like... just go back to like, let's say like I have a page that has all my days on it, and like on a daily log of what I'm trying to do, like, oh, like pick up, you know, dry cleaning or do all this stuff. But then on the next page, I'm like, all of a sudden I want to write about like books I want to read.
Yeah.
Like a list of books I want to read. I'll just go to the next page, write a list, look at the number page that is, go back to my table of contents, write down in there books I want to read, page 12.
That's interesting.
So it's actually, it's built in for you to refer back to this and like refer back to what you write, which is brilliant. But the lifestyle blog community, Pinterest, like washi tape, vlogger, fuckfest of the internet has caught wind of this and totally bastardized it with
I get it.
Their calligraphy and their like colorful pens. And like, not to diss that, but it's like, if you're into that, great. But the system was designed to be super simple and minimalistic. Anyway, right. Matt was just talking about putting positivity into the world as inspired by this video of Henry meeting Michelle Obama.
Right.
In my bullet journal, I have a habit tracker where every day I wrote down, like, it's like every day, like drink this much water, you know, wake up by this time of day, call my parents. But then one of my line items was resist, which was like, call my senators or like sign a petition or do something activist-y, but that I think what the missing piece, the thing that has to balance that out, like I felt good doing that, and I really am on this high of like being sort of a polite asshole to my senators and my congresspeople, but the thing to balance that out has to be like doing something good for like a random person, you know.
You know what? So doing something good for a random person, doing something nice for yourself.
For a friend.
I think just like don't forget to take care of yourself. I think a lot of us are in shock right now. I think a lot of people are dealing with it in all sorts of different ways. And who's to say what the right way to deal with this is? Yeah. Because I think we are right now. I think a lot of us are feeling a sort of grief, a sort of embarrassment. Some of us, I think, are feeling a sort of like nostalgia. I remember I thought about myself at 18 years old, dancing around in Union Square.
Come on,
yes, we canning, and I felt sad, and that shouldn't have to be a sad memory. You know what I mean? Like, oh man, it's just so hard. So I think like, yeah, it's okay to like
Be angry.
Be angry. But also just remember, like, there's things you can do to make yourself happy. Make yourself a tea. You know, go for a run. Like, it made me feel it's making me really feel good. We just moved into a new apartment. It's making me feel really good to keep it super clean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, that, like, just, I think, like, you can take action and also take that second to, like, take care of yourself. Because I know I'm right on the edge of going insane. Last night I had dinner with my parents and I cried to them because I think I'm going to delete my Facebook. Because I just can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Do whatever you need
I think I might have to delete it.
Come on, I'll support you.
Because it's making me crazy.
Yeah, I feel a little nuts.
Do you guys ever feel like this?
We've been
talking about it a lot, Henry and I.
Yes.
Yeah.
What do you
constantly
think?
I think it's both the good things about Facebook and the bad things about Facebook are stuff you don't need. Like, even when there are positive things happening, you can find even better versions of that in real life or good things that are also productive. And I don't know. I'm thinking about it a lot too. I can't get rid of it because I just think about like promotion things.
Yeah.
But you know what? And I spoke to a friend last night that, was texting with a friend that's dropped Facebook and isn't on it. And she was telling me, you know, you use Twitter and Instagram for those things. You don't have to not use social media, or you could just kind of like, you know, you could just get everyone's emails and send those emails, things that everyone does.
Sure.
Also just make an honest effort to see people outside of social media. What kills me is when people that I met and fell in love with for their talent and for who they were as human beings now just become a little square to me, mm-hmm. and a scary Facebook persona, mm-hmm. or like a weak Facebook persona or a funny, non-serious Facebook persona. And we're branding each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's not natural.
Yeah.
You don't need this thing to survive. And think about it. You think about like, oh, you know, like, I use it my way, whatever. Like, I'm not beholden to anything. I don't owe anyone anything. We all every day log on to the same website. That, there's something weird about that. Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't know. It's just, it's gotten to a place now where I feel like you must question it. Or at least if you're feeling like I am, or you're feeling a little insane, you must question it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think a lot of this has to do with the fact that we'll go ahead and totally admit that I have an addiction to it.
Yeah.
I am addicted to Facebook.
100% have an addiction.
And it's making me crazy. I mean, I had to fight the urge today to go on it several times so I could write this script that I've been talking about writing for months.
And you're almost done with it.
I'm almost done with it. But the thing is, like, I had to actively break down. Mm. I had to actually get to the moment where I was in tears yesterday.
Oh, man.
Like, you know, it's just... And I know that it's not my fault. I mean, we had our friend Zach Renner Harris over last night to watch Henry on Tonight's Show. And he said, you know, this isn't your fault. I mean, like, it's not your fault that, like, everyone in the world uses this thing. And it's like this resource that's there and you're expected to use.
Yeah.
And especially when you're in
everyone wants you to use it because they're constantly taking your data and using it for or against you.
Yeah.
And
you know what? It's designed to be a part of your life and it's designed to be ingrained in your life. But the fact of the matter is, it is not food. It is not water. It is not oxygen. It is not shelter. You do not need it to survive.
Yeah.
I would almost challenge people to get off of it because I really might. I'm still wrestling with myself because then today it was an easier day.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on it and like I loved seeing everyone sharing the video of you. And it was such a positive moment. I was like, yes, like maybe it can be this again. And I also don't want people to think that I'm running scared from like reality or like information or
that's
helping.
That's not what that is.
It just might not be mentally healthy for me right now.
Right.
Yeah.
So
you were mentioning how Facebook is not food or water. I only eat if I log on to Facebook a certain number of times a day. Anyway,
yes, that's how your body is.
Yes, that's how my body is. It has to happen that way. Matt, I think, no, you know what? You're absolutely right. Henry, are you? Because, okay, I think the three of us have just used Facebook for similar reasons, which is, but you know what, Henry? That's the same thing I think about. The number one thing I think about when I think about quitting Facebook is saying, oh, you know, but you know what I would miss is promotion.
Yeah. Yeah. And not only for your own shows, like one of my 2017 goals is to go see other people's shows more. Mm-hmm. And so I've been making a point every time one of our friends says my show is this day, I put it in my calendar right away. And if I'm free that night, I'm going to go. Like Chrissy Shackelford.
Yeah.
Her, one of her final shows is on Friday.
Friday or Wednesday?
I believe it's Friday.
The 27th?
This Friday.
It is.
This Friday?
Tomorrow?
Yeah. As in tomorrow.
The 13th?
Yes.
Yes, you're right.
She posted about it today. You know what? Continue talking. Yeah. I'm going to make sure I get the right
one. Next week is Asian Pop, which is like Maya and Ileana and some other people I don't know.
Yes.
Show, new show, first show. Mm-hmm. Halle Haas. Like, and I wouldn't know about them because I didn't like get an email from them. And,
right.
And it's not like they need to start an email chain just for the people that get off Facebook. It's hard to know. Like, it's the default, that's just though. As important.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be promoted too.
Right.
From certain people, at least.
Totally.
Ugh, yeah. It's is the 13th. Chrissy's show is the 13th. Okay. Diane Shangri-La at UCB, January 13th.
Chrissy Shackelford, future guest of the show.
She will be our next guest, we can announce.
Yes. I'm excited about that. Another light in the world.
Mm-hmm. True light.
Yes.
My pal.
Well, but see, that's the thing. It's like, oh, I guess technically, and what Matt's saying is that you could like go on Instagram and it's cross promoted in some cases, but
if we all decided to use Instagram that way, which I know that's not the way you use Instagram, and I'm also I'm not advocating for this revolution away from Facebook. I'm just saying if you're feeling like me and you're feeling a little overwhelmed by everything and a little watched and a little bit like crazy, you can take a break. And I spoke to a couple people that have taken a break and. It's been really good for them.
Yeah.
And I actually, everyone that I've spoken to that stopped using it, they said it was good for them. They have actually raved about not being on it.
Yeah. I believe Anthony King, who used to artistic direct UCB here, wrote this, I think it was probably like some self-published like Medium article about how he just is basically off Twitter just because of the news aspect of it. He does not want to feel constantly angry.
It's because you guys aren't journalists.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think
what do you mean you guys aren't journalists?
Like, all y'all on Facebook
aren't
like,
journalists.
You're not journalists. And I think that when it's on Facebook, it is filtered. Because it's in your voice.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And when you do go on Facebook, you are seeing a feed of people that you've selected to give you information.
Yeah.
And that is a filtered thing. So I would also be interested to see what it would be like if I just got my news from the news. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because that's not how I've existed in this world. I don't know about like our listeners and out there. I don't know about you guys. But the way I've gotten news and the way I've heard about things.
Is The View.
Is
no.
Is The View.
Is The View.
But also Facebook. But no lie, during the 08 election, I watched The View every day.
Mm-hmm.
I watched The View every day, and Henry hates The View.
I don't hate it. I just don't
I'm so
watch
happy
it.
We're talking about The View. Can we talk about The View?
We've mentioned this so many times on the show before, but truly there will never be a moment on TV again ever like Sherry Shepherd thinking the world is flat. Or not being sure if the world is flat.
Isn't that why we should hoist the... Let me just
not anymore, because the people on The View now suck.
I want to finish my thought about this news thing, because I don't want to just leave it dangling. Okay. I'm interested in the idea of not hearing about the Russian interference by hearing about golden showers. You know what I mean? #GoldenShowers on Facebook. I'm interested in maybe watching Rachel Maddow. And yeah. You know what
you,
I mean? Like,
oh,
not hearing about
to.
What you have to say about Rachel Maddow. while I love hearing that, I would also love to watch what she says. You know, we have cable now. I can watch television.
Look,
I can source things out myself. Maybe the Facebook won't be the first website I go to from now on. Maybe it will be a news source that I trust.
Yeah. Can we stop talking about Facebook? It's really making me anxious, and we've been talking about it so much. Like, I don't know
absolutely.
If any guest has, like, interjected like this, but I'm sick of talking about Facebook.
We're not talking about Facebook. I will say one more thing, Rachel Maddow.
I'm not going to talk about The View.
Okay.
I have no opinions on The View also, just saying that, too.
I do have opinions on Rachel Maddow, which is this. I've had people tell me that, like, me not shutting the fuck up about Rachel Maddow has helped them listen to Rachel Maddow.
It has
every day.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think I'm rolling that back. And even today over the phone with someone, like I was talking to someone and they were like, oh yeah, well, I'm just trying to enjoy this last week of Obama being president. And I was like, yep. It's tough. And then I was telling them about how like much of a jerk I've been over the phone to my representatives. And he was like, oh yeah, I saw on Facebook. And then for some reason I got very self-conscious, like I was being too seen. And it's that like brand persona thing where it's like, oh wait. And then I immediately sort of like,
yeah,
just
I know.
Defended myself, got defensive. And was like, oh, you know what? I think I need to roll it back, 'cause I've been a little too militant. Anyway. But it's interesting to hear that you don't necessarily want to listen to me talk about Rachel Maddow, but you want to watch Rachel Maddow, right?
That's what I'm saying. I just want my information like from the source a little bit more. as much as you can get that nowadays. Yeah,
but to be like, oh, look, Bowen's talking about this thing that I also listen to and is sharing with other people. That's
is,
cool.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. What, if I had listened to it.
Sure.
But what I'm saying is I'm getting the majority of my news from this website and I don't want to do that.
This is an even bigger zoom out from like red feed, blue feed. It's like meta information. Okay, let's not talk about Facebook anymore. The View. Oh my God.
Henry doesn't like it. It drives him nuts. But I also understand why it drives.
It's just like watching people argue.
Do you know
and
what,
like none of them are experts on it.
No.
Do you know what really made me feel shitty was when they were talking about Mariah.
Oh,
doing the New Year's Eve lip sync.
Like, come on.
It's like, none of you are singers. None of you know what it's like to have your ear.
Oh, wait,
dead.
Let's talk about that. So this is our first episode of the New Year. The three of us, I think, are all on the same page about Mariah and what happened on New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
Pro Mariah.
All the way.
Mm-hmm.
And look, what a good sport she was by just going out there and being like, well, can't do anything about this fucking thing. So I'm just going to like.
People are saying she was like being sassy or unappreciative. When you're at that level of stardom, it'd be like embarrassing for her to like be really shy and embarrassed.
Oh,
it was
sure,
like
yeah.
She owned it and was like, things are falling apart and it's kind of funny. And like, I thought she handled it perfectly.
Me too. Oh my God. And to end that whole fucking thing with the line, doesn't get any better than this, is so fucking good.
Yeah.
And my favorite was do the lift just for laughs.
And I am not a Mariah fan. I've like really rarely cared. It's not that I don't like her. I just don't care.
Same.
Her music has never really gotten to me. Maybe a few key tracks.
Right.
But overall, like I can name three songs tops. Like I don't care.
And that's why you don't love Mariah.
But that's, I'm saying that's why it's big that for this New Year's Eve thing, I was like, wait, no, she's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Henry had never heard the song My All.
Look, I will admit that I never really grew up with Mariah in the same way that a lot of other people did.
Mm-hmm.
For me, like that.
It's interesting, isn't it?
That like, the Mariah shaped hole was filled for me by Celine. Like I was like, I don't care for other people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened. Which I just like a very childish thing to think. But
you know what's interesting? Even as a young gay, I felt the need to stand behind just one of them.
Right?
Who did you love as a child? Was there a pop diva that you loved?
I got really into Janet Jackson.
Oh, that's a good
one. I didn't know that about you.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And I wasn't into pop music at all because I was very sheltered. Like I listened to like classical music and jazz and like music theater. That's it.
Yeah.
And then I got to sixth grade and there's this kid named Josh. Oh, I won't say his last name. He was obsessed with Janet Jackson and he like introduced me to her. Like we were, I think he's probably gay. I haven't seen him like since eighth grade, but
ooh.
I think he's probably gay now. And I think we were bonding.
Well,
because
he loves
we were both
Janet.
Exactly. I think we became like pretty good friends because we're both gay and he like changed my world. Like he would make me listen to stuff. He would make me watch music videos and I didn't know who she was. Like I know who Michael Jackson is because like you can't avoid that.
Right.
And
yeah,
for good reason. He's amazing. But yeah, I like it was so different than anything I'd been exposed to, and I was like, yes, I love Janet Jackson now, and like became really into it. Which
what
then
era
led me
of
to,
Janet was that?
Yeah,
this is like All For You. Doesn't really matter.
Yes.
Like yeah. So this would have been I was in sixth grade.
Like
2001.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 2001, 2002.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was huge at that point.
Yeah.
It was like a revival. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wasn't allowed to watch PG-13 movies until I was 13, but my friend Josh showed me The Nutty Professor and stuff.
Amazing.
And which, like, I had never seen a comedy like that. I hadn't seen a comedy that wasn't like a Disney or something. And it was like, It was insane to see. And wow. I didn't know who Eddie Murphy was. Like, I was very sheltered as a kid.
Did you bring that up because of Jana, or it's your first PG-13 movie that you saw?
No.
Because both. Of Jana. Yeah. Okay. Oh, really?
I don't, wait, is she even in the movie?
She is in The Clumps.
Okay.
The Clumps.
Yeah,
she's the love interest in The Clumps, which I can't say the word The Clumps without laughing. And I remember the reason I saw The Clumps is because one day I was just literally.
Could that be the title of this episode?
No. No, no, no. I mean, no, we'll figure out.
It's not worthy of our guest, but keep going.
The title of the episode is He Makes Us Sing.
Yes! Oh, I love that.
Okay, but the reason I saw The Clumps is because one day I was just like sitting in my house and my dad was like, hey, get in the car. I was like, okay. He's like, we're going to go see The Clumps. Oh, I was like, okay. And my dad had never done this. Never. But one thing about my dad that actually I'm remembering now is he actually is a huge Eddie Murphy fan.
Okay.
His first album was Eddie Murphy's comedy album.
Oh.
So he's like an Eddie Murphy fan going all the way back. I don't think he's seen like Norbit. But like back
Norbit, which is a great movie.
Is it really?
It's fantastic.
Any movie with a character named
Rasputia. Come on.
I mean, that's for me. But anyway. So he, I think, loves Eddie Murphy and just put me in the car and we went to go see it. And then there's that one scene where like the like one of the like weird white guys gets like ass fucked by that hamster.
I've never seen it.
Oh, you need to see The Clumps.
No,
it is a comedic tour de force.
I want to go home, smoke a bowl, and
yes,
just watch Norbit again.
Can we do that? Like
yes,
tonight?
Oh my god. Norbit.
Sure. Oh my god, we should.
Norbit's
I would
fantastic.
Love. No, wait, not Norbit though. We should find a way to get The Clumps.
No, I don't.
I've actually never seen Norbit and I kind of refuse.
I've never seen
it. Okay, either. How can you expect me to watch The Clumps but you refuse to watch
because
Norbit?
Because The Clumps is actual quality.
Because Norbit is actual quality.
Okay. This is
guys, listeners, help us weigh in on this, please. Norbit versus Nutty Professor 2, The Clumps, which is better?
Okay,
let's keep going.
You know, totally out Nutty Professor 1. With
you know what
Pinkerson.
Else?
Yes,
Jana
Henry.
Is in that I liked at the time when I saw it is Why Did I Get Married 2 by Tyler Perry, which also has Jill Scott, who is my current favorite
Jill
vocalist
Scott,
of all
on.
Time.
Yeah, that's who Henry loves.
Jill Scott is my number one.
That's a good
like,
one.
I would have the same reaction to meeting her as Michelle. Like,
explain
yes.
why, because Henry has a very interesting taste.
Yes, yes. Explain.
When you listen to Jill Scott's music, it is all her. She writes every word. She writes every note. She's a fantastic musician. She started out as an English teacher in Philly and was teaching poetry, and she started writing her own, and she started going to jams and stuff, and she'd always been a talented vocalist and stuff. And then I can't remember who discovered her. I think Erykah Badu discovered her.
Oh my God.
They're really good friends. And
you also love Erykah.
And I love Erykah
yes,
Badu. Oh
must,
my God. Yeah, I've seen Erykah 4 times live.
Wow.
I've only seen Jill once because she rarely comes to New York. She did New Year's Eve at Radio City, and I was poor at the time and couldn't go. But she's the best. When I did see her, I just cried the whole time. Like, and her albums don't do, like, I think they're really good, like, easy listening. Like,
yeah,
they're really relaxing and just the most amazing beats and stuff. But she doesn't, like, go in with the vocals. When you see her live, she is one of the best vocalists I've ever heard. She has, like, the range of an opera singer, but, like, the soul of, you know, a soul singer.
Right, yeah. Right.
And then she, like, takes from all types of genres and puts them together. She is so... When I see her live, the one time I saw her live, it was life-changing.
Wow.
Did you ever watch her show on HBO?
No, I didn't.
It was called Number One Ladies Detective
yes.
Agency.
Oh, no, I never watched
it. It was like, I think, beloved by critics, but it did only last one season. Anika Noni Rose was on it as well.
Anika.
And who's also incredible.
Come yeah. forth, Anika.
Come forth.
Come forth.
That is a front runner for the title of this episode.
We've said
as
this
well.
Before.
Come forth,
Anika. You know who else we've said come forth about on Las Culturistas? Catherine yeah. Keener.
Oh, come
we
forth.
We said come forth, Catherine Keener. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, we listened to a little bit of Jill Scott here and there.
Yeah.
And I like her. I don't really get her track on the Hamilton mixtape.
What did she sing again?
She just does Can't
says,
say
no
to this. That one.
Oh, but she sings it from the
yes
perspective of the
yeah.
I liked it. Listen, no, wait, is this true though? Does she arrange her own stuff too?
I believe she does a lot of that. Wow. I'm sure she has people she works with, but she, that's like, it's impressive. Her ideas and stuff. And I've listened to tons of live recordings, and she always does really unique. I've never, like, one of her most famous songs and my favorite song is Golden, and every live performance is totally different.
Wow.
Not even different, like, tempo, like different genre. She has like one where she does it as like a samba, or she has one where she's like an insanely slow like jazz ballad, and then she'll like, that's or awesome. It's so cool. She's so amazing, and she gets the best musicians, like incredible. They're all jazz musicians playing like R&B and stuff, which is like the best package, jazz musicians playing R&B. And oh, it's so good. And you know who else is amazing live? Lauryn Hill. I've seen her.
Of course.
Yeah.
I've seen her 3 times. And one time I saw her, she was singing, I think, Everything. What is that one?
Everything is Everything.
Everything is Everything. Yeah. And she like had her backup singers like keep singing this like ostinato, not an ostinato, but like this repetitive phrase. Uh-huh. And slowly she made each person in the band drop out. She'd like point at the drummer and like do like the like kill yourself sign, and they'd stop. And so it's just the backup singers. And then she took the backup singers and she'd be like, she'd put her finger to her ear and then like gesture to one of them, be like, and sing a note, be like, sing this note now, sing this note. And she would change the chords they were singing and like make weird modulations happen.
Wow.
And it morphed into like just this weird, like avant-garde, like soul music thing, just her and her 3 backup singers. And then slowly she would sneak in the other instruments again, and it would like be a different song. It was,
oh my God, mind-boggling. That sounds amazing. Just hearing you describe that is incredible.
Yeah, she is so
love it.
Good.
Yeah,
she's and great. And her band is incredible. Didn't you meet her keyboardist recently?
I met someone that plays keys for her. Yeah.
Where?
I worked with him at the Rye.
Oh wow.
Yeah, the guy, real super cool guy, Dom.
Yeah,
he said he plays keys for Lauryn. And that she's amazing. I think she's getting out of jail soon.
Yes.
And that she's gonna
tour again.
Hopefully begin creating music again. Hopefully. Yeah.
Also, UCB Comedy's Matt Rubano is the bass player on Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Yeah, which is,
we know this,
phenomenal.
Isn't that nuts?
It's my favorite thing about him. He's a great guy, but like that's like
That's like one of his
the second thing. What's your second favorite thing about him?
His stage presence.
He's a
stage
presence. Also, like, aside from being an incredible musician, he's a very talented actor, very comedy guy.
He is.
Oh my God. Okay. So I guess, but maybe we can go into this more.
You know what though? I think this is a good opportunity to ask Henry about.
I was going to say
his beginnings.
Henry, this is the question we ask all of our guests, as I'm sure you know. What culture did you grow up with, and what were some of the cultural relics that made you say culture is for me?
My mother was like my culture curator, tour guide. Come on. I was like very sheltered again. Like I didn't know like about the Spice Girls until like 5 years after they were a thing, you know?
What does your mom do?
My mom is a coloratura soprano, and she travels all over the country. She's also done international tours and stuff. As a classical soloist, she's sung with major symphonies around the world. Yeah. I'm so proud of her. She's amazing. And
what's her name? What's her first name?
Diane.
Come forth, Diane.
Her stage name is
Diane Penning. Oh,
and she's so amazing. I'm so proud of her. And sometimes I've like cried before because I feel guilty that she had me and my brothers because it prevented her from becoming like a household name. Like I think she's
I feel this way about my mom.
Really?
Yeah.
I think my mom could have been like Laura Osnes.
All of my mom's, I'm sorry, just sidebar.
Yeah, go for it.
All of my mom's college friends from med school say that if my mom had stayed in China, she would have been the Surgeon General, like the equivalent of the Surgeon General.
Oh my God.
She was the best student and at the best medical school in all of China. And then she moved to America. Like I would not have been born in China.
Sure.
With the one child only policy because I'm the second.
Oh, wow.
So
wow,
I just insane. I get a weird existential thing where it's like, I exist at the expense of my mom's career, but it's interesting that you feel this way.
Yeah. I wish my mom had moved to New York auditioned for Broadway because she's that good. And she's a great actress too. Like she would do community theater when I was a little kid. She was in The Music Man, which was a huge cultural thing. I knew every word to every song in The
Marian?
Music Man when I was 3. She was Marion, and she was also in Annie. And I think she played Grace. That's when I was really young, but I still like, my favorite song of all time is Maybe from Annie. It's because it's one of the first songs I learned.
Your favorite musical too.
And Annie's my favorite musical.
That's great.
Because it's the first like music I was introduced to.
Yes.
I would hear my mom practicing it or I don't know. But yeah, she's amazing, and I wish, and she's still working, like she tours still, and she has an amazing new musical partner that is doing some like jazz stuff with her. Like, she's so good. I love my
your mother. I saw a video of Henry and Diane playing on the piano together.
Beautiful. Yeah.
And
oh, we,
beautiful video one. But Henry will say that he was terrible or something. I
disagree. No. I mean, yeah, I mess up a lot, but it's fine. Like, she, I will also say, is such a good pianist.
Yes.
And I'm so proud of that because she's not known for it at all. But when I was a little kid, she taught piano lessons all the time. And she would, this is like early culture stuff, like she would play like Beethoven sonatas for me and like point out stuff. I would sit next to her on the bench and she'd be like, isn't this part cool how it does this and stuff like that. And it like totally just like gave me, like I'm obsessed with classical music still.
Yeah.
And even though like I don't perform it at all because you have to commit to being a classical musician. You need to practice like 5 hours a day and stuff, which I could never do. But I still have appreciation for, because of her. And even before, the first like movie I would watch consistently is Mozart's The Magic Flute in German.
Oh my God. What?
And cause she would put it on before I could even speak English. And it's, you know, Mozart. So it's incredible. This is good for your listeners. No, if you want to get into opera, a good like gateway opera is, am I using that word correctly?
Yeah.
Is The Magic Flute. It's like a comedy, but it's also like very like fantastic, as in like a fantasy, like dreamy, insane. There's dragons and kings and queens, and but it's also really funny.
To do a reboot. Sorry, keep
going. Oh my God! Well, it's at the Met this month, actually.
Oh great!
But the like lead is like this famous Russian guy, so it's like $1,000 a ticket, is like why opera is dying, because who can do that?
No. Yeah.
But The Magic Flute, Die Zauberflaute or something in German, is an amazing opera.
That's the title. That's, I'm sorry, that's the title.
Die Zauberflaute.
Die Zauberflaute. Die Zauberflaute.
I'm pointing to our producer, Alex. Let's please translate that in Google Translate. German for The Magic Flute, okay?
Yeah. It's
Die Zauberflaute.
And it's also one of the only, or not only, but like most operas were written in Italian, no matter what the composer was. But Mozart wrote it in German, which is kind of like huge as well.
Because he was Austrian.
I have to interject and say, I had an idiot music teacher in seventh grade that told me every opera was in English. He's like, you know, every opera is in English. The reason you can't understand the words is because they're singing it so classically.
What?
No!
And we all went for it. I don't know if he was fucking with us. He seemed genuine.
I don't think there were any English, this was maybe totally wrong, any English operas till like the 1900s.
Well,
like Benjamin Britten.
Not according to Mr. whatever the fuck.
Wow.
Oh my God.
But he legitimately told us that. And as you're saying this, I'm like shaking my head thinking about like how there was literally,
you were robbed of an opera.
You know, it's just fascinating to me because like it's like with anything, like you obviously had an exposure to that kind of thing. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? But like for me, where I grew up, it was all about sports.
Yeah.
And then other communities, you know, like I had a friend who in college who was she went to a high school in Texas, and obviously they're all about sports there as well. But the budget for the theater program was like over the top, like pictures of her in the Scarlet Pimpernel with like a floor length gown. Mm-hmm. Like obviously the budget through the roof. And it's like, it really matters what you're exposed to as a child. Like those instincts can either flourish or just never get tapped into based on like what you're exposed to as a child. It's why it's so important that we have like arts in schools, and that like makes me panic.
Mm-hmm.
Because I hope we're headed in a good direction with that, but who knows? I mean, we need that. Like,
because
thank God that you know all that shit. Like, say about how you're able to make a living now.
Yeah. And it wasn't just my mom. Like, I had my elementary school music teacher, Mrs. Van Dessel, Kathleen Van Dessel. I think that's her first name. She was so excellent. Like, she would expose us to, like, she would, like, take classical music and, like, paint a picture for us kind of in our heads, be like, doesn't this sound like a river with salmon jumping in or something like that? And I would like, I had this like deep knowledge of like classical music when I was like in second grade. I knew like all these composers and I could like identify like Beethoven symphonies and stuff, which I can't even do anymore. But I loved that I could do that. And one lesson I can remember like sitting in the room, there's this composer, French composer named Camille, I always mispronounce his second name, last name, Cesar. It looks like Saint Sans. Yeah, him. He wrote this piece of music called Carnival of the Animals. And each piece is supposed to sound like an animal you might see at the zoo, like a lion or an elephant, stuff like that. And that lesson, like, I asked my mom if we could buy it. It was the first CD I ever owned. First album I ever bought was Charlie Brown Christmas, which is the best. But first album I ever owned was Carnival of the Animals by, like, the Philadelphia Philharmonic, I think, led by Marvin Hamlisch. Or that's Pittsburgh. Ooh. No, Pittsburgh.
Oh.
And he was the Pops conductor. So, never mind. But, yeah, Carnival of the Animals. Also, there's one piece from it called The Aquarium, which is supposed to sound like fish. And Alan Menken totally was inspired by that for the Beauty and the Beast score. You know, the da 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 da. You know that piece? Uh-huh. Like when the rose is like.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. Like, listen to The Aquarium. Whoa. From Carnival of the Animals. They're almost exactly the same. And I'm not, like, shaming Alan. I think it's, like, awesome that he was.
Alan Menken is a thief.
Theft.
No, Disney Alan Menken theft. Is my other ultimate. Favorite. Like, jeez.
Oh, my God.
Alan Menken is. The other part of my childhood, like, yeah. I would watch Aladdin.
So you did have
over
an exposure to Disney stuff.
Disney, yes.
Because I'm thinking to myself, like, I feel like I understand what you're saying about that, but I don't understand how you could be a child or alive exposed to the world and not know who the Spice Girls were, because you'd go into school and everyone would be talking about it. Like, I remember the day Britney Spears, like, hit.
Oh, my God.
I remember one day there was nothing. And then the next day, there was Britney Spears. And everyone was talking about it. I was in
Here's
third
the thing.
Grade in 1998, honey.
This is not, like, I'm not shaming you for this. I think you were a popular kid. I was not a popular kid. I was a nerdy kid.
Wow.
I was only friends with, like, nerdy Christian girls. Like, they weren't listening to Spice Girls, stuff like that. Like,
that's a good point. Well, it's about what you're exposed to, like you just said.
Well, I guess just, like... I mean, I don't think it had to do with anything with popularity. I think, like, if I was obviously grew up in, like, a Long Island community that was, like, very influenced by the media, I think.
Sure.
I mean, like, because when I went into school, it didn't matter who the fuck you were. I mean, everyone knew who Britney Spears was. It just was not escapable.
Mm. Yeah.
But if you are in a part of the country that, like, has the option to turn away from that.
Yeah.
For whatever reason,
yeah.
I think that choice could get made, and then those things wouldn't be a part of your childhood. It's just interesting. Like, the difference is...
Sure.
The differences in, like, upbringing, because I would have, I remember years ago, I went on a date with a guy years ago. This is like 5 years ago. And he asked what Pop Roulette did, our sketch group. And I was like, yeah, we write songs about pop culture. And like we just did a sketch about Taylor Swift. And he was like, who is that? And this is like when, like, Speak Now had been out, Fearless had been out.
She was
huge. Mm-hmm. She was one of the biggest ever. And I was like, you don't know who Taylor Swift is? I thought it was a joke. But, like, I guess that is possible.
Yeah. Yeah, it is possible.
Yeah.
After R.I.P. Carrie Fisher passed away, I saw this guy that I know post, like, I don't know who Debbie Reynolds or Carrie Fisher is. Why is everyone so sad? A gay guy. And
God.
I was like, wait, how?
Come
like,
on.
Even, like... I mean, even, like, straight people, like, Star Wars. Come on, how can you not know these two women?
I want to say something that I think is the mission statement of this podcast, bitch.
Okay, bitch.
Because Matt and I were watching Hairspray Live.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then we were texting our friend Joel. And Joel was at our other friend Adam's place watching this. And Joel would not stop texting me about this jerk there who was a gay guy who was like, who are these people? Who's Queen Latifah?
Who's Jennifer Hudson?
Jennifer Hudson. I was confusing her for the movie. Who's Jennifer Hudson? Who's Ariana Grande? Like, just
what
was kind of
was he being facetious or was it real?
It seemed like he was, like, aware of. He was just very deliberate in how, like, pop culture averse he was, and he, like, kept making that a political thing where he was like, "Well, I don't follow pop culture, so there."
Yeah, how cool.
So the mission statement of Las Culturistas is to spread the gospel of culture.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you know what? I think when I was, like, in middle school, I was kind of like that guy. I was like, I don't like pop culture. I don't know who Janet Jackson is. And then
this
friend, Josh, who I think he might be married, which is why I'm not saying his last name because I don't want to out him. he, like, exposed me to Janet Jackson. He was, like, the beginning of my, like, pop culture world
journey.
Yeah.
You know what? Josh was a big part of Henry knowing when culture was for him.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aside from, like, because I'm so happy, like, that I did grow up with, like, all these musicals. And, like, West Side Story was, like, a life-changing moment for me.
Yeah.
Like, when I first saw that movie.
My all-time favorite musical.
Me too.
Yeah.
Even my dad likes it. He's not, like, a musical theater guy.
It's so good.
It's the most incredible music, I think, in the ever written.
So
I love it.
Who's the most popular musician that you like?
Musician?
Well,
Like instrumentalist?
No, what I mean is like if there's is there someone that you go to bat for in terms of like the divas, the girls.
The girls. Oh, of like people that are like in the Ariana Grande
right,
camp.
Yeah.
Not like Jill Scott who's kind of like
no, she's alternative. Not, she, like, she's not like, yeah. Like the way the gays get behind one.
Beyonce.
Who do you get behind?
Beyonce is like the
no,
standard
actually answer. I know what he's gonna say.
Oh. Yeah, my favorite. Well, I think Beyonce is better, but my favorite is Rihanna. I love Rihanna. Oh. You knew I was going to say that, right?
Well, I'm surprised that you say you think Beyonce is better because you've said otherwise.
Beyonce Beyonce is a... I've said that Rihanna is better than... I'm saying I'm more captivated by Rihanna than I am Beyonce.
You are crucifying your own boyfriend.
I'm a truth teller. Okay, I'm a seer. Okay, I drag it out. I don't care who it gets dragged out from. I bring it to the front.
The way Beyonce... And I think it's because of like... how they act outside of like their music career. Like Beyonce's so secretive and stuff, which is cool. But like
Rihanna's funny.
And when she's singing, I feel hilarious. Like, it's, like she's not like Beyonce is so rehearsed, which is amazing. Like she works so hard to get everything perfect. Rihanna, I feel like when you're watching her live, you're like, something might happen.
Mess. Yeah.
But not in like a bad way. Like you really feel like she's there in the moment performing. And I think that her voice is incredible. It's so rich and deep. And
I like
know,
her voice.
She used to not be good.
Especially in the last album cycle, especially with 4 or 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I thought she sounds amazing in that. And then in Higher, in her album Anti. But yeah, I agree with you, Henry. That's not a bad answer.
I hate that Calvin Harris song,
this
new
is what
one.
He came for.
The, yeah,
that's because Taylor Swift wrote it.
Oh, did she really? Yeah. I feel like he everything Kevin I like about like. Rihanna, he sucked out of it and just like
oh,
it could be
no,
anyone.
No character.
Yeah. It's because it makes me sad.
Like he collaborated with Taylor Swift on it, and Taylor Swift writes those things where you don't really need a voice to sing them.
Yeah.
You just literally
You're right.
Like it's just like it's just tones.
Yeah.
You know?
It sucks just like We Found Love is another culture stopper in my opinion.
Yes, I agree.
And so good. And so I was excited when I saw that she was collaborating with him again, and it was such a disappointment.
But that's because here's the difference between We Found Love and This Is What You Came For. This Is What You Came For is trying to like have character, where this is We Found Love is deliberately like it's like very
it feels like Rihanna.
Right.
Yeah.
This Is What You Came For. It doesn't feel like Rihanna.
Yeah.
We Found Love. And also the video for We Found Love.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Is so good because it feels like Rihanna. It feels dirty. It feels raw. It feels like it just got fucked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, whereas This Is What You Came For feels like, oh yeah, this is Rihanna laying this down in 15 minutes after hearing a probably vocal demo by Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
One song that I think is very underrated that I really shit on at the time it came out, is, how does it go? We would, pour it up.
Pour it up.
Yeah.
Pour it up, fall out.
Matt and I, when I got super drunk, and then when we were walking home or something.
We hated it at the beginning.
We hated it, and we just made fun of it, and we just kept singing it out loud.
Yeah, we were. Oh, I remember like, in this moment, like, I think about this. And then someone's in a car coming by, and they were like,
That's the other best part about Rihanna is her melismas, because they're so sloppy and just like they're like fat. Her voice is like fat in them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, my favorite
one.
She
got a fat voice. PH fat. Fat. Like, fuck your voice.
At the end of the bridge on Rude Boy, when she's it's like the most magical musical moment of pop music in the last 10 years.
It's a flat circle.
Let's quickly, before we jump into I Don't Think So, Honey, let's quickly talk about this Culture Stoppers list that Henry created.
Yes, a few months ago.
Because Henry now stopped the world! World stop on Facebook.
Carry on.
With this Culture Stoppers pop music kind of poll he did.
So a bunch
now,
of votes came in.
I find the poll to be a little problematic because I think that a lot of songs that are more classic snuck in there. Like, pull up the list.
Okay, well, here, let's just give the outline. So choose as many songs as you like, but please be selective as you decide if it is a timeless culture stopper from like 1997 to 2016. Compare it to I Will Always Love You. Will your grandkids know the words to the chorus of Hips Don't Lie the way that we know the words to My Girl by The Temptations? The survey is not to decide if it is a culture stopper. I think we decided these are culture stoppers. I think we already decided these are culture stoppers. But it is a timeless culture stopper.
Right.
Again, timeless culture stopper.
Yeah, that's big.
Give the top five from five.
Okay, top five. And this is, okay, so with the number, I'll also give you the number of votes. Okay. A lot of people voted in this. Number one from 1997 to 2016 is, let's say it together.
Well, number one, or are you going from 5 to 1?
Oh, let's go from 5 to, oh, that's what yeah. you're saying. I'm so sorry. Yeah, from 5 to 1. Number five, we have Baby Got Back, Sir Mix-a-Lot with 67 votes.
Which I shouldn't have included because it's from 92. It's,
that's what I'm saying.
Right? Which is truly, I think, huge. That like
it's that timeless.
It felt so current when I was in like eighth grade at the school dance and it's playing and it yes. was everyone knew everywhere. Like it felt like oh,
it was in the Charlie's Angels this movie. Year.
Yeah, that's because it was already a classic song. It right. really doesn't. It shouldn't be on.
It should be on this list. Okay,
I
so
know,
then
yeah, people have gotten not upset, but like
sure,
I don't know
sure.
what to do about it. So I'm not going to move it.
Let's disqualify that, and then I guess within those rules, number six, which might you could consider as number five, is My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion, which I
for sure classic.
100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I feel like one of the last great movie song singles.
Sure.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Not from an animated movie.
Not from an animated
back
movie.
Back when they mattered.
Right, right, yeah. right. Okay. Number four is, with 69 votes, is Wannabe by Spice Girls. Which
I'm surprised.
Which I don't know if... Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Oh my God, I just butchered this. I'm sorry. Number four is
Hit
actually,
Me Baby
One
More
time.
By Britney Spears is the next one.
Okay, Matt and I were at a club in Chicago called Scarlet, one of my favorite club in the whole world. Matt, I kept hyping this up to Matt, and Matt was like, I don't know, we'll see.
It was good.
It was great, right? DJ put on Hit Me Baby One More Time after a string of like modern hits, but as soon as Hit Me Baby One More Time came on, I was like,
killed it.
This song is amazing.
Every yeah. gay melted.
Yep, yep, yep. yep.
I think that deserves to be on there.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure.
Yeah. You're gagged.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's with 68 votes, and I'm so sorry I spoiled this early. Wannabe, 69 votes.
Yeah.
Will our grandkids remember the lyrics?
I think
I don't think they will.
I think that they will.
Hmm. I feel like it's going to develop that same sort of 80s cheese.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I get that. I think
it's fine,
deserving. I feel like it wouldn't be on there if it wasn't deserving.
Sure. And yeah, I think 80s cheese is exactly right. I think mm-hmm. it's going to be kind of like the time of your life. Like,
yes.
we know that song. It's yeah. like so corny.
Right.
And you wouldn't think it'd be a culture stopper, but somehow it is.
This comparison. I think it's a culture stopper in part because its lyrics are so fucking bizarre.
Mm-hmm,
like,
yeah.
and also their energy performing it is so
frenetic.
Individual and
yeah.
like mm-hmm. crazy. I think it really captured an feeling.
Let's be real though. Let's be real though, girls. When this song comes on at like a wedding or a party, like it's lit. Like everyone,
yeah, it's yeah. lit. You get out there,
mm-hmm. right? So it's a fun. It's a crowd pleaser. Okay, next.
I think this is controversial.
Yeah, number two. Because Wannabe was number three. Number two is with 69 votes. Oh, so okay.
So it was a tie.
Wannabe and Let It Go are both tied for number two. So
oh, Let It Go. Yeah.
Let It Go
Let
by
It Go
Idina Menzel.
By Idina Menzel. Now, I think that we are fresh off this being fucking inescapable.
Crazy, crazy, crazy.
But I think in 10 years, it doesn't have as many votes as Hit Me Baby One More Time.
I would argue against that.
Think about all, like, I've watched, I don't know, 100 videos of toddlers singing
yes.
it. Like, they're going to carry that with them.
It is the
same
reason.
Way we...
Right. This song, I would say, is the reason Frozen is the highest grossing animated film of all time.
Yep. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, is the song that good?
A lot of people talk about why it's bad, and I don't know. I like it, and I think that if you there's a song and you just like it, there's something good, and maybe you don't need to put it into words.
There's obviously something good about the song.
Yeah. yeah.
Like, it's obviously good.
Yeah.
How much of it does it have to do with Idina?
Yeah, could someone else sing it? Like, even like an amazing vocalist like Jennifer Hudson, like I think Idina had that musical theater flair mixed with like I don't know, she has the right combo.
Yeah.
Even though she can't sing it live. I've never heard her sing it live well once.
Yeah. No.
She's been a part of three cultural phenomenons. Like there's something.
Wait, what, Wicked?
Rent?
Oh,
Wicked
Rent, yeah.
and Frozen. Like, those yeah. are huge.
Mm-hmm. And like, Enchanted. Don't forget Enchanted.
She's in Enchanted?
Yeah.
She plays Patrick Dempsey's, like, girlfriend.
Enchanted's the ones with Amy Adams?
Yeah, she's in that.
Oh.
At the end of the movie, Idina Menzel gets sucked into the cartoon world and no one bats an eye.
Wait, Matt and I had a bit about this. We were like, oh, yeah, like There must have been a missing persons report for Idina Menzel's character in real life.
No word on what happened to this woman who magically disappeared, although sources say she may have disappeared into a comic book world.
And she fell into a sewer in Times Square, which is the portal into the
comic book. Oh my
God. But we're sure she's happy. Moving on, we accept this new person
that's
as crazy.
That's a great movie.
It's a good movie. I have questions about the logic jump. Anyway, number one on this list, which I think is deserved, and also it shows up in the results, because with 89 votes.
Come on, girls.
Single ladies.
Single ladies!
Yeah. And Single Ladies is a song that doesn't musically get me going in any way.
Sure.
But I do admit it just makes you happy when it comes on.
Have you heard it live?
Yes, twice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a gag. It's a bop. I remember the moment I watched Single Ladies, I was walking down St. Mark's. This is freshman year at NYU for us. Walking down St. Mark's and just watching it, and girl, changed my life. That was another thing where it was like, before it was a moment before Single Ladies and after.
That's culture stoppers. Culture and now stoppers. It is time to stop
everything. I want to talk about Single Ladies a little more. I remember like when it happened, I loved the video, and like, yeah, all my gay friends in college were talking about it. And then I went to a party with my straight friends, and right when we got in the car, they're like, we got to play that new Beyonce song, Single Ladies.
That's when I know.
Yep.
Yes.
Like my straight friends, they were jazz musicians. I only hung out with like the straight jazz guys, and they were like, we got to listen to Single Ladies.
Wow.
Yeah. I think everyone loves Beyonce.
Culture
except
stopper.
Republicans.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Which, who needs them? Anyway. Okay. It's time to stop. It's time to do.
Wait, I just want to say one more thing. I'm so sorry. I know I have to go. West Side Story. Huge culture thing for me.
Yes.
The other big, like, life-changing musical that I saw my community theater do it, the Grand Rapids Civic Theater, Sweeney Todd.
Oh.
Changed my life.
Sondheim at an early age.
Now that you said that, this is, I want to shout out my favorite teacher, because you shouted out a teacher. Mm-hmm. Jane McGinnis in AP Lit in 12th grade. She exposed us to Sweeney Todd and Stephen Sondheim, and I will never forget. Something just turned on. Mm-hmm. I was just like, oh my God.
It's unbelievable.
It's the best work.
See, I will say, and we can move on, I envy early exposure to Sondheim. I wouldn't count West Side Story as like actual, like fully fledged Sondheim.
It doesn't feel like that. Yeah.
Like and this is another thing about Henry. This is another thing about Henry, just making people sing. Like, I didn't get into Sondheim, full fledged Sondheim, until very recently. And this was because at Henry's duplex nights, people would go up and just sing them, and I'd be like, God, this is just beautiful, complex music, and I want to know more about this. So then I, just after the new year, I watched all of Sunday in the Park with George. It's all on YouTube.
Uh-huh. Oh, awesome.
Mandy Patinkin and Bernadette Peters, and then there's all of Company, and there's all of, like, all these great Sondheim. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so...
You guys were there when that guy Larry Owens sang.
Yes, oh, Larry Owens. Hello.
I host the piano bar at the duplex every now and then, and this guy named Larry Owens, who I had never met, came in and sang Sunday in the Park with George, which you wouldn't think... The opening number, which you wouldn't think is
a
room
stopper. Right.
Yeah. Everyone leapt out of their seats.
Yeah, amazing. Like, he's an amazing talent.
Look out for Larry Owens.
Larry
guys.
Owens.
Jeez. Larry Owens, bitch.
New friend. I mean, we connected. We've been friends. I think he's sort of like peripherally in the community. Now he's going to be even more in the community because he's getting into the comedy gig.
Oh, that's
hashtag
so great.
Beloved.
Oh my gosh.
Now we have to move on.
Okay.
We're going to move on to your favorite segment. I'm talking about you, the listener. I don't think so, honey. This is where we take 1 minute to rail against something in culture, anything at all, anything that's grinding our gears right now. All the ticks and tacks of culture, we're getting into it, honey. All the doodad day. So Bowen, would you like to start or should I?
I can start.
Okay, we have 1 minute on the clock for Bowen Yang. I don't think so, honey. His time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Trader Joe's locations in New York City. I was in Chicago last week, and I went to the Trader Joe's on Diversity, and girl, it was a spacious, empty, fully stocked Trader Joe's. Could you imagine? I don't think so, honey. Trader Joe's in New York, where the line goes around the fucking shelves. I don't think so, honey. Trader Joe's that don't have the ready to bake chicken pot pies that I love. They're my favorite thing of all time at Trader Joe's, honey. And I never get them. I only get them once in a blue moon when Trader Joe's aren't fucking packed like sardines. But I go to Chicago. Everything, every shelf is fully stocked. It is a bounty. It is a plenty, honey. And the lines were short. Trader Joe's workers in New York are very nice people, but the ones in Chicago are just they don't have this, they don't deal with the stress. So I don't think so, honey. Trader Joe's in New York's, all of the New York locations, the Union Square one, forget it. Forget it. I used to think that was normal and that was acceptable, but I do not accept it anymore. I only go to the one that is on Court Street in Brooklyn. I don't think so, honey.
That is time. God. That is 1 minute, Bowen Yang.
Oh my God.
Wow.
He comes against the chain.
Yeah. That is Trader Joe's, which gives us all
I feel the same way, yeah.
Wow.
Trader Joe's in Chicago is amazing.
That Union
Square
one is a sacred location for me because it was the first time I ever like bought wine by myself.
Sure. I mean, like, I will always thank and be grateful for that, because likewise, but no, not anymore.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to go now.
Great. Matt Rodgers, I don't think so, honey. Time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. The Golden Globes giving Damien Chazelle a screenplay award for La La Land. Now look, bitch. I think La La Land is good for many, many reasons. I think Emma Stone gagged me to death. And you know what? I'll come for you. Anyone, I don't think so, honey, say that Emma Stone wasn't right for this part. Because guess what? When you put a camera in your face, you better be able to act it, honey. I don't want to see Laura Osnes on screen with a camera in her face. You know what? You'll be gagged when it goes to Broadway. And you can see, here's to the fools who dream song. In that beautiful voice. Well, guess what? This is on film, girlfriend, and you need a different flavor. That said, her acting and the acting of the other people in the movie and the direction of Damien Chazelle, very good director, almost doesn't even matter because the script is bad, bitch. Okay, twice in the movie, oh no, I forgot I had this thing, is a huge plot point? No. Screenplay? No. My BFA lit on fire in that moment that it was handed that Golden Globe. Also, the fight they have is the most infuriating fight ever. You're deliberately not saying what you want. It was like watching a car wreck happen on purpose. La La Land, you don't deserve a best screenplay. Oscar, don't even think about it, Oscar.
Oh, and that's I Don't Think So, Honey. That's the longest I Don't Think So, Honey that's been on record. 1 minute and 5 seconds.
Well, I had a lot to say, and can you believe I have more to say about it? Maybe another episode.
Another episode. Mm-hmm. We'll follow up. We'll do an I Don't Think So,
Honey. But it shouldn't be winning scripting awards, girlfriend. Yeah.
You guys have to have another episode with another music theater person and talk about Sondheim, because there's so much there.
There's so much there.
And well, maybe I'm sure you'll come back.
But I know there are people that know a lot more about him than me, and I want to hear that person.
We want to know what you think right now, and I Don't Think So, Honey. And
okay, can I do, you've done this before where I had 30 seconds, say 30 seconds, I'm going to switch.
Oh, you can do that.
I have two.
We almost did that, and then we decided not to, but we'll do it for you.
We'll do it for you, but I'm saying it's going to be tough.
It's going to be very hard. It's much easier.
Maybe I'll ignore it and just keep going on the same.
All right, ready? All right. Henry Kapersky's I Don't Think So, Honey. Oh my God. This is an iconic moment. It starts right now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, gym class. It is the worst class. It has been made fun, or like it's in movies for the past 4 decades of like nerdy kids just hating gym class because there's evil jocks and bullies or like bitchy girls that are awful, bitchy boys too. Oh. Bitchy is for everyone. It is not physical education. It is competitive sports education.
Yes.
And I hated gym class so much that I stopped. I avoided physical activity at all. For everything, because it was like such a tormenting thing in my life. And I'm going to keep going. And, Oh my God. I hate gym class so much. You should be teaching kids how to be healthy. Teach them why the way they move makes them healthy. Teach them about eating healthy. Teach them how like calories work. Don't make us play basketball with jocks. And I Don't Think So, Honey. Like some kids are nerdy and they can't handle it. And also our society like lifts sports up so much. So the kids that are good in gym class are revered and the kids that are bad, even if you're really good at music or something, you are just like vilified and like made fun of. Gym class needs to change. And
I Don't Think So, Honey.
I Don't Think So, Honey, gym class.
Wow.
Yes! Oh,
you
my
did
God.
Great. And also there was real passion behind that.
I feel like I stumbled a lot.
Interesting fact, both Henry and my fathers are physical education
yes.
teachers.
Yes. And I have talked to my dad about this, and my dad, I know he puts effort into like making sure the kids that aren't into it like are having a good time and that's not great. Being mocked. Also, like locker rooms need to be supervised. The shit that happens in
yes.
locker rooms is
it's
disgusting.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Traumatic.
Sexual harassment, bullying, the way that 7th grade boys will talk about girls. Talk about just disgusting things.
That's where it starts. That's where you nip it in the bud.
You need to have a supervisor in there.
It's bad.
And
it's
look,
really bad.
This gym class talk, that gym class, I Don't Think So, Honey, first of all, iconic. Second of all, coming from the picture of health, Henry Kapersky.
Oh,
truly.
So
you gets me to eat kale.
You cannot. So if Henry is telling you that he hated fitness as a child, or the trimmings that come with fitness as a child, and he had to undo years of that to get to where he is today, that is real, mama. That is mm-hmm. culture.
I think it's definitely problematic. I think it's all about like this kind of like traditional toxic masculinity. Bullshit.
Yeah, and there's still gym teachers who will have like captains choose their team, like it's RuPaul's Drag Race with kids, and then there's like poor kids that are chosen last, and that scars them for life.
Yes,
it is really
like
fucking stupid.
Terrible, and it happens every day.
And you know what? Some of the gym teachers get off on it.
Ugh,
I'm sure
they should be. They should be not fired, but demerited.
And I know that for some kids, that's the only place they shine is the gymnasium.
Sure,
which is. So that's good for them, but you need to make it work for everyone. Yes. And we also need to help those kids that shine in gym, like find love for like academics too. And I don't know.
No, you're right.
Ugh. I agree. Also because like
So what? You were great at sports in high school. That doesn't take you very far. Mm-hmm. I mean, like,
unless it does,
which good for you. You're in the less than 1%. It's just too prioritized. I say that with love for the act of running, jumping, and leaping. Mm-hmm. I have to say this has to be, we have to come to an end. Henry has a show to go to. He's going to go perform in Ha Ha Wow from Reductress, hosted by Nicole Silverberg. It's a great lineup tonight. You should always go to see this show.
One
also, Sunday
us.
Night, I do want to say, I want to plug this show. Nicole Silverberg is hosting a charity show for Fountain House at Union Hall. Check that out. I think this is a really good charity, and I want people to go to it. It's just a really good thing. It's a good example of putting positivity and wellness in the world, and I really want to shout that out.
And one last plug for me and Matt. We have the final performance of our pop roulette show that's been running at UCB called Amazing Earth. It's on January 20th.
Same night as A Little Night Music with Henry. So make it a UCB night. You come see us earlier in the night, then you hop on over to see amazing talent singing and doing their thing and having a great time. And thank Henry, you're the best. I love
Henry,
you.
Henry, you're the best.
I love both of you so much.
Love you very much.
It's awesome to be on here.
Are we a throuple now?
Yes.
We're a throuple, but I am only platonic.
Ooh, it's not true. Okay. Well,
and I'm so excited
you.
For Chrissy Shackelford. I've been waiting for this episode. I tell Matt all the time, when is Chrissy going to be on?
Next episode, honey. Oh. It'll be historic.
It's going to become reality.
Mm-hmm. All right. Bye, guys.
Everyone kiss into the mic as we go out.
Forever Dog. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Joe Cilio, Alex Ramsey, and Brett Boehm. For more podcasts, please visit ForeverDogProductions.com.